they called me in there and I already knew what it was and I'd been using that morning. And once they, you know, were like, you know, you failed a drug test for this, this, this. And I was like, yeah, you know, I have a problem. And at that point, I was doing 15 to 20 Percocet 30s a day.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Banduho. On today's episode, I'm talking to Clinton Holland, right-hand pitcher who was the second-round pick of the Blue Jays in the 2013 draft out of a Kentucky high school. Holland's talent on the mound has never been questioned, but he spent just 2 years pitching in affiliated baseball as a result of a crippling drug addiction that not only derailed his career, but derailed his life for nearly 10 years. I'm going to go ahead and provide a trigger warning for this episode as we discuss some pretty brutal subject matter. Clinton lived as an addict for over 10 years, and that's mainly what this episode focuses on. From 2014, while still with the Jays, to Thanksgiving 2023, Clinton struggled with addiction. We talked about the brutal reality of going from a second-round pick to a homeless drug addict in less than 5 years. And fortunately, we talked about what has gradually gotten him out of this. I saw from afar that Clinton had made a comeback in professional baseball and independent ball in 2021. But I was surprised to learn. I only learned when we started recording that his sobriety was very fresh, as recent as Thanksgiving 2023. So, you know, this is an interview that is a look back and hopefully a look forward. I say this at the end of the show, but I am obviously rooting for Clinton, but he is still very much in the early processes of this, both trying to get himself together for his son, for himself and his life, and looking at making a comeback in baseball. But, you know, I hope that this is something that anyone who has known anyone who has struggled with this or just finds this story interesting can take something from this and root for Clinton like I'm going to. Hoping that he continues on this path that he set himself on, and that, you know, whether he pitches again in professional baseball or not, that in 10 years he's happy, healthy, and sober. But I'm grateful that he took the time and grateful that he was so honest and upfront with his struggles and, you know, a lot of the root causes of those. So hope everyone enjoys the episode. And you know, if you do, I would encourage you to DM Clinton on Instagram and tell him and just tell him you're rooting for him, or just, you know, anything like that. So again, hope everyone enjoys. If you enjoy the show, remember to subscribe, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts, all that stuff. And also make sure to subscribe to baseballamerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. A lot of good stuff coming out of BA. We got the early college baseball and high school baseball content. We got the All-American list dropped. It's about to be my favorite time of year with college baseball starting. So, and always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. So with that, let's talk to Clinton Holland. All right, joining in for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm, he was a second-round pick of the Blue Jays in the 2013 draft out of a Kentucky high school. Clinton Holland. Clinton, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. And like I told you before we started recording, I was recommended to reach out to you a while back because of your story by someone who I just cannot remember who it was. So if you are that person, you were listening, thank you for helping set this up and definitely reach out again. But Clint, I typically start off with the question to anyone on this show of when did you first realize you'd have a future at the next level of baseball? But I was reading a story about you and it said that you touched 91 as a freshman. So I'm not going to ask you. I'm just going to say pretty early on, I assume you knew that you were going to have some looks at the next level.
Yeah, I actually started playing high school ball in seventh grade. It took I can remember feeling like I knew in T-ball, man, really. It was just something in me. I knew whenever I watched the Reds on the TV that that was something that I was capable of doing. Which didn't really make any sense because I'm just from a little small country place in Kentucky, you know what I'm saying, with nobody around me that really, or in my family that played pro ball or anything like that. But I just felt it in my heart that it was something that I was meant to do.
And what was baseball culture in Kentucky like? And especially as you started clearly showing that you were advanced in the game. I'm sure listeners will be tired of me saying this, but I grew up in Texas where even in the 2000s, like travel ball was very prevalent. There was all those things. How did you, How did you showcase your talent and work to get better, especially in what is not considered a super baseball rich environment in a basketball state?
Yeah, 100%. The time that I was in Lexington, Kentucky, though, was like prime. Me, Walker Buehler were on the same team at 13 and 14. And then also we had a guy, Anderson Miller, who's got a podcast, Unfinished, and was a third round draft pick by the Royals. And we played on the 12-year-old World Series team together. And we had like a lot of really good guys in the area. But I think it was really just luck that my dad really was into finding out what would be the best. I guess I didn't really meet my dad until I was five, and then once he got me thrown in the backyard, I think he realized it too, and he did a lot more of the work than I did, I would say. I don't know how to put that into words.
Well, so with that, if you start playing high school at an early age, you're popping 91 as a freshman. How early did college coaches come calling? How early did scouts come calling? And how much does that, as a 14, 15-year-old, especially in the era, it was still like you got into high school in the late 2000s, that was before 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds were committing to colleges. It was still, that was mostly done as your junior and senior. How does it go to your head? Does it give you any sort of like ego about yourself?
I'd say it did. And looking back on it, I didn't feel it, but looking back on it, you know, I think it did. I committed to Kentucky my freshman year. I went to a camp and I was able to talk to them because I was actually on campus. And they asked me and my parents to come back onto campus later on that week. And they end up offering me a full ride to SEC as a freshman, which is like, you know, bright in the backyard. So I committed, and I didn't even end up doing any of the NCAA clearinghouse stuff. I was not interested in going to college. So I ended my recruit process pretty early. I mean, I remember I got hundreds of letters, I mean, from Dartmouth and everything from the time I was a freshman on, but I didn't even read any of them, you know.
You didn't even make Kentucky wine and dine you and take you to an SEC basketball game, because I was going to ask about that.
Oh, I got all kinds of those. I was the number one recruit, so Coach Bohannon did me all kinds of favors. I saw Anthony Davis and Harrison Barnes like pretty much courtside when Anthony Davis hit the game-winning shot against North Carolina. I got all those perks, but I didn't go on any other recruiting trips or anything like that to any of, I didn't go to Miami or anything like that, which would have been cool.
So then as you start advancing through high school and, you know, it seems like you're blowing people away for the most part, you guys win a state title. When did you start looking at the pro avenue and then also start realizing I don't really want to go to college?
My sophomore year of high school.
That's early. That's pretty early.
Yeah. My sophomore year of high school, I was rated number 3 in the nation by a Perfect Game. I went down there and that was my first year with KBC. And it was really, I mean, I was the only ranked guy on the team. We went down and played at the World Wood Bat in Atlanta against like the Doolin's Dodgers and the East Cobb Astros and all that. And they have, you know, 9 kids on that team that are on the top 50. And we end up getting number 3, I think. But I went down there and I was touching, you know, 93, 94 as a sophomore. And at that point, I knew that was the road I wanted to take. But also at that time, I was the farthest thing from, I'd say, your normal 16-year-old kid who's about to get drafted. I was not, like, I didn't take it. I was playing baseball because I was good at it. I wasn't, I wasn't a baseball player. I don't know if that makes sense to you. Like, I listened to a couple of your podcasts, just getting ready for it, and I listened to other people describe their process of, you know, going through it and how they are completely in on being a baseball player and the workouts and all that stuff. Everything to me was just very natural. I did do workouts and had some training and stuff like that, but it wasn't a day in, day out grind. which is why I ultimately became unsuccessful in pro ball, because I was not mature enough and ready for that, I don't think.
Well, with that too, as if you're not considering yourself, you know, a baseball player the day in, day out and things like that, what were you as a pitcher, especially like getting into your senior year? Mm-hmm. Were you working on that, on the craft of pitching at all, or were you just throwing hard and just had the stuff coming out of the right hand?
Oh, dude, I was very, for whatever reason, God always put me in the right position, and I had great people around me. My high school coach was Jeff Parrott. Once I moved to Woodford County, I moved from Lafayette with my dad my sophomore year, and then I moved to Woodford County my junior year, and then bounced back to Lafayette and back to Woodford County in my junior year, the year that we won the state championship, and stayed eligible, which, you know, shouldn't have really been possible. I don't know how that happened. You know, we didn't cheat or anything like that. It just, you know, it worked out. And then the craft on the mound, I was, he blessed me. I was always a pitcher. I threw hard, but I always had four pitches. Even out of high school, I didn't throw the changeup as much coming out in high school, because I sped guys up because I threw so hard. But I was always working on my craft at pitching, because I love the game of baseball. I just didn't consider myself a baseball player.
With that, as you're getting into the end of your senior year and you've kind of decided that you want to go the pro route, how much did you know about what pro baseball is like, what minor league baseball is like, what's required of its athletes, what the living situation is like, if being fully, you know, fully prepared is 100%, what were you looking at as a high school senior?
Nothing. Like zero. I was not prepared at all.
Did you know that you would have to go into the farm system? Like five levels? Did you know there were five levels and stuff?
I did know that, but I thought you would get treated better than you did. That's for sure. And the Blue Jays ownership was different whenever I got there, and within a couple years. Alex Antopoulos was the owner or GM, I guess, and the ownership. And they switched a couple years in, and it was a very good switch for the Blue Jays, and that's why they're having the success that they are now. But whenever I first got there, and the guys that were right in front of me did not have the top flight, you know, eating and just aspects of pro ball that other teams did have, that I know other guys that were in other organizations that they did. And me being immature and not ready for that, it was just downhill quickly, you know.
Well, let's talk about how you landed with the Blue Jays in that pre-draft process, because you were one of the top prospects in the 2013 draft. Looking at your BA scouting report, a lot of the on the field looks good. There were makeup concerns, and then also concerns about your UCL. So as you're navigating that pre-draft, especially you get kind of that month before, you know, in the May, June timeframe, what were your conversations with teams, with your advisor? Like, did you have any idea of how the draft worked as well?
I didn't. I figured out very quickly. I couldn't stay off Twitter. I was immature. I was tweeting song lyrics and, you know, and Chief Keef and stuff like that. And it was just,
man, he had a moment back then. Yeah, that was right into it when he showed up.
Yeah. But if you know, if you're familiar with his lyrics, you know, it's not anything that you want your, a draft pick that you're about to give $1 million tweeting, and people didn't know that they're song lyrics, and they think that I'm really portraying this lifestyle. So it really, I got a different rap than what it was. And where I did start throwing so hard so young, they had a long time to pick me apart, you know, like from 15 on, and from somebody who didn't have a parent who had been through this process and stuff like that. I was just, you know, going out there and trying to be a normal, you know, kid and make mistakes and stuff like that. But it was under a microscope. But that draft process, man, was wild. Actually, the Blue Jays sent in a guy to like do like a psych eval with me pretty much to make sure that I wasn't, you know, what they had thought it was. And he went in and said I was, you know, great makeup, all that stuff, because, you know, I'm not a lunatic. even though the things I've done, you know, I'm a pretty good guy. And so he ends up saying that I was completely fine, and they got to draft me. But that night was the state champion or the state baseball game in Lexington, so I decided to go there. And the Texas Rangers were going to draft me two picks before. So the Texas Rangers area scout comes to my house with my dad and my stepmom. I'm at the baseball game trying to get back there. And for whatever reason, the Blue Jays end up picking me two picks before the Rangers were going to pick me. So my dad and stepmom watched me get drafted to the Blue Jays with the Texas Rangers scout when I'm not there. So it pretty much just
awkward night for that guy.
Yeah, that just pretty much, you know, encases the whole process of leading up to it, if that makes any sense, man. I was ineligible when we won the state championship. I was ineligible for all of the season other than I think the last eight games, because I had six F's in five classes, because I was just pretty much not going to school. And I'm the number three player in the nation, maybe one number one in the nation at that time. And I've got to send out emails to all these scouts telling them why I'm not pitching, because I'm being an idiot. So then I have to go in, and you're able to have one F, but I had six in five classes because they kicked me out of Spanish. And I worked my ass off to get back for those final eight games, and then we go on a run and win the state championship, the first and only one in school history. And really, I give all the credit to my teammates, because they had all kinds of pressure on me because of me, and people saying that they weren't going to be anything because I wasn't playing. And they went out there and won every game but like three. And then we go on to win it. And they really grew together without me. So it's kind of just a cool situation that came to that.
So it sounds like you get things together at the end of your, you find a way to get on the field, mm-hmm. you get drafted, you get through all that. You definitely get drafted later and take less of a bonus than if things would have all been buttoned up. But once you sign on the dotted line, what are your expectations for yourself at that moment? Do you have a big league timeline? Do you have any idea of what you can be, or you know, what you're hoping the next couple of years look like?
I got sent back home after they signed me. I got sent back home because of the UCL was partially torn, so they didn't know if they were going to sign me. So I was originally going to get like $600,000, which is still only half of the slot, and then I would go down to from $600,000 to $400,000. And within those couple weeks, I come home and I'm not touching a baseball. I'm not doing anything other than, you know, a lot of stuff I shouldn't have been doing. And then so they end up deciding they're going to sign me. I go down there, and it takes me about a week of throwing until they let me throw in a game. And then I go out there and I shove. I throw 12 straight innings, haven't picked 12 scoreless innings. They move me straight up to Bluefield. And I throw decently well up there. But after, I think after the first outing, I don't think, I don't know. It was a different situation than I thought it was going to be. We were in just a really rundown old motel that, and it was just, and I got homesick. I was, and I just, that was the turning point of like, oh man, this stuff is not for me right then. And then, that off season comes very quickly after that Bluefield, outing, just like two outings in Bluefield, I think. And then I go home, and that first off season, I don't touch a baseball until the next spring training.
What did you spend your time doing? And I assume your check had cleared, at least part of that bonus had cleared by then.
Oh yeah. I bought a El Camino and smoking pot and doing dumb stuff, man. The next year I go down there and I'm just out of shape, and you know, it's just a difference in the mood around me. And I can feel it.
Did you feel a personal responsibility to, oh, I should have done something differently? Or at that time, are you just like, I will, like I always have, I will figure it out?
No, I was just that in that time. Now looking back at it, I can see I was just mentally done and just in a dark place. I don't know, just maybe depression and just mental and just self-hate, hatred and sabotage, because like I knew I should have been doing more. And I wasn't, and I felt responsible for, my family and, stressed, and I knew that I wasn't doing the right things. And it just compiled, of like, okay, well, it can't get any better. Like, you're not gonna, like, it's never gonna get any better than this. Like, you're going down, like, why are you going to be the difference?
And this is even before you had Tommy John.
Yeah, this is before I had Tommy John, but this is the reason that I'm going to have Tommy John is because I was just out of shape and I didn't do anything. I was probably 40 pounds out of shape, you know what I mean? And I wasn't even 18. I was drinking. I looking back on it, I didn't know I was an alcoholic at that point. But I was an alcoholic and a drug addict at that point.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I was a alcoholic and drug addict in high school. That was just high functioning, and I didn't know it.
When does you go through TJ? You have TJ in the spring of 2014. You make it back physically on the mound. You pitch in 2015 and pitch to success. At what point do you turn into not a high functioning addict and turn into a full blown addict?
During that off season, I have my son. I have a son, and when I was 19, and that off season. So after Tommy John surgery, I go down there and I get in really good shape. Me and Jeff Hoffman are working out together. The Blue Jays, eighth pick, I think, at that time, and he had Tommy John coming right out of college. So me and him were locker mates. we're running together. I'm in great shape. And then my son is about to be born, so I go home. And just going home was the worst thing ever. I should have gone home for like my son and brought him back, like down to Florida or something. I don't know. But just going home was a terrible choice for me, because then I got into, you know, I already had a prescription for the painkiller because I just got the Tommy John surgery and stuff, and then just bad people around me, you know, and like, oh, it's pretty much the same thing, da da da. And then I got that first one, and I loved it, man. The Percocet 30 is what I got hooked on the first time. But during that whole off season, I went to do my physical therapy and stuff like that, and I did just enough to be able to throw. I was going in there and doing the physical therapy part of it. I wasn't working out. I wasn't doing, you know, any of that part. Really.
Were you able to hide your addiction from the people around you?
Oh, yes. Yes. Nobody knew. Have you ever seen the movie Blue Mountain State? Or the show Blue Mountain State? Sorry. I was doing oil changes like Dad Castle trying to beat test. You know what I mean? So that's how severe it got for me.
So in 2015 you fail some tests, mm-hmm. and you get suspended. At what point did you acknowledge, or at least tell the Blue Jays, like, hey, this is actually a problem?
I'd say it was after, I guess, after the first one, and then they called me in there, and I already knew what it was, and I'd been using that morning. So I go in there, and Gil Kim, who he was with the Rangers whenever they had Josh Hamilton. So, and he had known me from Perfect Game and Baseball America and stuff like that in high school. So I go in there and already, you know, knew what it was about. And once they, you know, were like, you know, you failed a drug test for this. And I was like, yeah, you know, I have a problem. And at that point I was doing, I think, 15 to 20 Percocet 30s a day.
And with that, I mean, you know, that was the last affiliated ball you ever threw in 2015. Mm-hmm. How
very short run.
How fast did everything go off the rails to where you know, at that point you're functioning to the point of at least like showing up to the ballpark and pitching? How fast did your life completely derail?
Very quickly after that. I mean, the Blue Jays kept me around for a while. They did not want to release me. Like I was with the Blue Jays until like 2017, I think. They didn't want to release me. They tried to help me. They sent me to treatments and stuff like that. I just wasn't ready to do it. I would, you know, fake it and, you know, do what I had to do to get through the program and stuff like that. And I would throw in strikes games, and I threw well and all that stuff. But then, bam, another one would come down, because they would drug test me every, you know, couple weeks. And then there was a, you know, during the off season, I come home, and I'm supposed to be doing an outpatient program and reporting back to the Blue Jays and stuff like that. And I'm just not doing it. And then, so Sam, the therapist for the Blue Jays, is calling me, and I'm just not answering. Gil Kim's calling me. I'm not answering him. I'm just completely, you know, ignoring my bosses pretty much. And then, they finally get a hold of my grandmother, actually. And my grandmother calls, and they're getting a hold of my outside family, getting them to call me. And I finally call them back, and they were like, you know, what's going on, da, da, da. And I talk to them and tell them everything. And then they're like, okay, well, then we pretty much have to release you. And I was like, all right, I understand.
Did that impact you at all at that point? Like, was that,
no,
was, I was that a bummer?
I was so done. I mean, I was so done. I knew what it was, but yeah, I mean, it impacted me. It made me go deeper into my addiction and my depression, but it didn't have any impact on the baseball life of it. That was already so far gone and dead. Within me, I never, you know, saw myself touching a baseball again. But I went from that, and then I went down to treatment in, Florida, trying to get clean from the Percocets, and end up becoming a heroin addict. I was IV heroin, crack, and meth user. And I overdosed, you know, 14 times over a couple years.
With that, how were you spending your time doing anything but using?
Oh, no, yeah, nothing. No, I abandoned my role as a father. I was down in Florida, You know, I'd abandoned my family, you know what I mean? Everything, you know, nobody knew whether I was alive or dead. I was, you know, living off of insurance treatment, no money, you know what I mean? A terrible, you know, terrible person.
And with that, I mean, I'm not an expert in addiction. I've listened to stories and things like that. A lot of, from my understanding, it has to be want to. If you want to make that change, you know, you're 4 years removed from a state champion, second round pick, now a full blown addict. Where did any sort of want to pull yourself out of this in any form or fashion come from? Was there a single moment? Was it gradual? Like, how do you even think about being serious about sobriety? Because it sounds to me as if all the treatments you went to, all with the Blue Jays and whatever, was not a legitimate effort to get sober for yourself.
No, none of them were for myself ever. They were always for somebody else, or for the Blue Jays, or for my son, or for our family. It's been slow and gradual, man. It's taken until very recently, you know what I mean, for me to have the desire to live life and, like, on life's terms, you know what I mean? Because that's really what it is. It's the desire to not live life on life's terms. I don't like to deal with consequences that I create, or, you know, that life has to give me. So it's been very slow and very gradual. It took until from 2017 to 2020 for me to like kick heroin.
What was the first step? What was the first baby step of maybe I want to do something other than do this all the time?
I was tired. Every time I used, I died. And the last time I overdosed in my bathtub, the day before my birthday, with my son in the next room. And I was just, the selfishness that takes to put my pain onto other people and could scar them, and the pain that I have caused to people, and the scars that I have caused people, you know what I mean? It's just so selfish for me to be that weak, to, you know what I mean, not care, and like my pain is more important than their happiness, I guess. I don't know.
So you have that moment. What is next? Like, what do you check into another treatment facility?
No,
because it sounds like it wasn't one of those cold turkey, I'm off. Where do you go from there?
Yeah, no, I went from, I had to go from being a needle junkie to, you know, smoking it, to snorting it, to only doing, you know, it every once in a while, to only doing uppers and not doing the heroin. And, you know, and then I was just drinking, and I was drinking myself into oblivion. You know what I mean? I'd drink a gallon in 2 days, you know what I mean? And I'm trying to hide it. So I'd, you know, drink a pint in 20 minutes and then black out and, you know, just be a person that nobody wants to be around. And man, I just got tired of not remembering hurting people and having to apologize for it that I didn't remember.
What was the first time you had, like, how do I phrase this? Like a good memory during that time, or something that was not just a drain on you emotionally, or a drain on the people around you. Like, when did you start to have moments in life that weren't clouded by substance or associated with guilt, or like when did, like, you see light?
Thanksgiving, just recently. It's wild that you asked me to do this podcast, and like how I've the change that has been very recent. It's been slow and steady for years, and then these last 3 months, man, it's like just boom. And I don't know what it is, but it's like God is in me right now, and everything that I do it's been for a reason. It's working out. And like I said, I don't know why you messaged me or anything like that, but everything's been good. I don't know.
That's one, that's awesome to hear. But two, also comes as a surprise to me, because you did make a comeback in baseball in 2021, pitching an indie ball. Walk me through that, because you went from a guy who was never going to pick up a ball again to a full-blown drug addict to someone who is gradually making their way out. But I had read it as an outsider as you were through the fire as much as you can be as an addict. What was 21, and what was getting back? What motivated getting back into baseball?
COVID. I had a drunken rant about the 2012 state championship team and how that we were the best in Kentucky history, you know what I mean? And then this guy Ryan Fusey messaged me and was like, hey man, chill out, but text me tomorrow. And then he texted me and he was like, man, I believe in your talent, da 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 da. And he actually has an agent, or is working with an agency now, but he's like, I believe in your talent and all that stuff. So, and then I started working out and stuff, but I couldn't stop drinking was my problem at that point. It was like, yeah, I kicked the heroin and the drugs and everything, but it was putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, you know, like I was just masking those things. So I was one foot in, one foot out. And then so that's the problem with, and that's why I got released from the Gateway Grizzlies and from the West Virginia Power, was because I was drinking, and then I could not continue to drink. And I drank going into the clubhouse, and then in both occasions.
Were you any semblance of the pitcher? Like, were there any glimpses of who you were in 2013?
Oh yeah, man. It's still there. I mean, my first outing with the West Virginia Power, I got up to, I think, 95. And I mean, if I came out of the pen right now, and at that point I was in no type of shape. Like, I was literally just getting off the couch. You know what I mean? Like, I was posting on Instagram acting like I was working out, but I wasn't. Like, it was like, you know what I mean? It was just BS.
So with that, you're still, I mean, you're not old. You were in high school less than, you know, or I guess 10
about
years
10 years ago.
God, time flies. But yeah. I mean, still, you're not 30, if I have that correct.
No, I'm not 30 yet. I just turned 29. But I'm in by far the best shape that I've ever been in. This is the first time I've ever worked out. Like, I started working out right at the perfect time. And I was like, you know, honestly, if I just continue to do this and like a winter ball situation, came up next year, I would love to do that. And really my goal for it, like, it's not even to make it back to the big leagues or anything like that. It would just be amazing if I could have a good season or two and just like have that off in my chest, like to where I can look myself in the mirror and not despise, you know what I'm saying, what I see half the time, you know what I mean, and feel that regret. And then, you know, and then be able to get into like coaching and be like a baseball lifer, man, because I have, like, not to toot my own horn, I have a skill of telling kids or you know, younger people how to move their bodies and to where they can actually get the results that I'm getting, that I'm looking for, you know, or that they're looking for. Because it doesn't matter how much information and good information that you have, if you can't put it in the terms that they understand and make their body do it to get the result that you want. So I would really enjoy doing some coaching. And I'm thinking about doing some remote coaching. There's a guy, on Instagram who, Nick Novelli, I think is his name, and he does some remote coaching and stuff like that, and he's teaching people how to get into that.
You mentioned when you were in high school you only did baseball really because you were good at it. What is your relationship to baseball now? It's still the thing you do, it's still the thing you have a gift for.
Yeah. I was saying that I loved baseball. I wasn't a baseball player. I didn't want it to be a job. Like, I love the game of baseball. I my favorite baseball player ever is Ryan Friel from Cincinnati Reds. And it's not because he's the greatest baseball player, it's because of how he played the game. And he loved the game. And then, like, my favorite football player is Hines Ward because he always had a smile on his face. And that's how I always am with baseball. I have, like, an infectious smile and a kid-like mannerisms out there because I do love the game of baseball without any shadow of a doubt. My problem was once it became the job of it. But I have taken the game of baseball away from me more than anyone else has. And nobody's ever told me, you're not good enough, give me that jersey. You know what I mean? Ever. And which is a sad reality that I've only played that much of adult baseball in my life because of my own actions. So that desire to be able to walk away from the game and not feel cheated or like I cheated it, kind of, because, like, I know my ability, would be nice.
So if I'm playing, I want this for you, but if I'm playing devil's advocate, if I am the GM of an indie ball team or even an affiliate or whatever, why should, you know, if you get all the way back physically, why should someone sign you mentally?
I mean, there's a thousand reasons not to. And like I said, I'm to the point where I'll tell you every reason not to. And that's the difference, because I would always lie to you. I'd try to spin this web of, you know, I'm better than I really am. And I'm willing and honest to say that it's only been 3 months. So it's, it is a scary thing to say that I won't go back to doing those things. But the change in me right now, anybody that is close to me and around me will tell you that I'm a different person right now. And it truly, my aspect for it is my fear of life. I've just now recently, like the last couple of weeks, started like thinking like, man, like just how much time I've wasted. Like my son's 9 now. And I'm like, man, I only got as old as he is now until he's 18, like a grown, like, and I'm just like feeling like I'm getting that, what's it called? That midlife crisis, I guess, where like you contemplate death and like, you know what I mean? So I don't know, man, I'm hungry. So, I mean, that would be the only thing. I couldn't tell anybody to do anything because, like I said, if you were to ask anybody, they'd probably say not to, other than the guys that I played with. Every guy that I've ever played with knows who I am. And even coaches, you know what I mean? But I don't know, man. I couldn't give you a great reason to, other than you'd be getting more than you think. I don't know. You'd be getting more than you think.
So in these 3 months, what guardrails are you putting up with in your life? Like, what are you doing to maintain success?
I don't have the desire to live that way anymore. I can't put myself in those situations anymore. I won't put myself in those situations anymore. I have no desire to, I guess little things are, you know what I mean? I do prayers now and I don't listen to rap songs that, you know, put things in your head that, you know, music that you listen to really does affect, well, it affects me, I guess, you know what I'm saying? My emotions and stuff like that get affected by things I listen to, things I watch, you know what I mean? I'm easily swayed, I guess, in those ways, in my emotions. And seeing something on TV, it looks, you know, I mean, it looks like, oh yeah, that beer looks good or whatever. So I try to keep myself out of just those little small things. But really, man, it's just, there's been so much pain for so long in my life that I'm just so done with it. You know what I mean? I'm just so sick and tired of being sick and tired. So just, I'm done is the best way I could say.
What do you want out of the next, you know, you spent, you know, almost 10 years as an addict. What do you want out of the next 10 years of your life?
I want to be able to say that I impacted people around me in a positive way. That's my biggest thing. I love helping people. And I feel like I'm good at it and people relate to me in a way. I've got, like, I can relate from everybody from, you know, millionaire baseball players to the drunk on the underneath the bridge, you know? So I just want to be able to truly tell my story, in a way that can help people in bigger ways than I can if I'm just, you know, sitting on the couch and keeping it in, I guess. I don't know.
Well, this podcast is a start to that. Clinton, I'll tell you, like, I'm rooting for you. I came into this thinking that, yeah, I wasn't sure what to think, and like knowing that this is fresh and new for you, but congratulations, for, you know, for these 3 months. And I'm hoping, you know, we can reconvene down the road, and it's been a year, it's been 5 years, it's been 10 years, and you get the things you want out of life. And, appreciate you joining the show. You know, that's all I've got for you. And I look forward to seeing what life brings you in the next 10 years.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you.
You got it. And that's it for today's episode of From Feet on the Farm. Huge thanks to Clinton Holland for stopping by, walking us through his journey, and wishing him the best on the next 10 years of his journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review for an Apple podcast. And make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We'll catch you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.